But he was, I know he was a big hit the last time that we had him on. He was my former colleague in the State House of Representatives. Currently, he is appropriately enough the ranking member of the Public Health Committee. It is State Representative Dr. William Pettit. Hey, Doc, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Great. How are you this morning?
A little sluggish.
What was that?
A little sluggish.
A little sluggish? Are you able to sleep in now that you're not in session because it's been suspended, or are you as busy as ever?
Oh, it's been way more busy than even if we're up in Hartford. The amount of information coming out every day is exhausting with questions and things, so it's been really busy.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk to you. Well, I want to talk to you about a couple of things, and why don't we just start right there? I mean, as a doc yourself, you know what the coronavirus is. You know it's been around for a long time. But what makes this strand or this strain of the coronavirus so difficult to not only treat but to prevent it from spreading as rapidly as it is?
Well, you're right, coronaviruses have been around for 50, 60 years or so, but this one has migrated from animal host into the human host, which always creates issues for us in terms of our own immune response. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's done that, and presumably it's had some mutations along the way, it is more contagious than the flu virus. That is, well, you know, if people are in contact with someone with the flu or with this, you'll probably infect twice as many people with this virus as you would if you had the flu. It's not quite as contagious as Ebola or measles, but it is more infectious or contagious than flu. And there is no clear-cut therapies, although people probably heard of the news are looking into some of the hydroxychloroquine drugs that have been out there that have been used for malaria and for some rheumatologic disorders, some joint disorders, but whether or not it's been tried in small numbers of patients, whether or not the works remain to be seen. There's also been trials of a number of antivirals on the market. We have very few antivirals for specific virus infections. You know, we can treat now hepatitis C and B. We can treat some herpes infections. Varicella, chickenpox is a herpes infection. So a number of those in that family you can treat. But many of the viruses that cause like respiratory infections, we have no therapies for.
It's that's part of being a virus, right? There's viruses are not curable. That's what I've always been told.
Well, they're tougher to treat than typically bacterial infections in general. So most of the care at this point is supportive, aimed at alleviating symptoms, and then when people start to develop issues with shortness of breath, to give people adequate oxygen.
But it's not necessarily a death sentence, particularly if you are younger and do not have a pre-existing condition, and that's where I think a lot of the fear comes from. They hear about elderly people over the age of 75 or 80, or those who do have pre-existing respiratory issues and asthma or something similar, who contract this and they have a tougher than normal time with it. And some of them, particularly if they're of a certain age, end up passing away. What happens is, you know, a fear. People get panic stricken when they hear that. You've heard obviously about self-quarantining and people staying at least 6 feet away from others. Is that what you recommend people to do of any age, even if they're a healthy 35-year-old?
Yes, without a doubt, because you're right. It's certainly the people at risk of developing severe illness are older people. People with pre-existing medical conditions, typically heart disease, lung disease, cancer, diabetes, and immunosuppressants. But even in this country, given the limited number of positive tests we've had to date, nearly half of those people have been in the 20 to 60 group, and the other half have been 60 and over. So younger people can catch it, younger people can carry and pass it on to other people. So I think the only way we as a country have of preventing this from blowing up into huge numbers is practicing social distancing, good hand washing, self-quarantine, if you will, if anybody's infected or thinks they may be infected until they find out, they need to stay away from traveling outside the home and actually quarantine themselves off from other family members.
Are the tests still difficult to obtain?
Becoming easier. We have, I think, 15 different hospitals that have now, it's 12 or 15 hospitals that set up drive-through testing throughout, covers most of geographic Connecticut. Most of the testing sites at this point still require that, want you to talk to your physician first, because they're going to screen people initially, and they're looking at people who have a fever, who have cough or other symptoms that may be consistent with the infection. They're using a lower number for fever in the elderly than the younger, because sometimes the elderly don't mount an adequate fever response to an infection. So always the best first step is to talk to your primary care provider. If you don't have one, you should call the main number at your local hospital and get referred to their desk, because most of the hospitals have a desk that'll help screen questions concerning the need for testing.
How taxing is this on on doctors, on nurses and doctors, people on the medical professionals that are on the front lines? I would imagine, well, two things. I mean, these people have got to be working around the clock. Number two, how fearful themselves are they from contracting this?
Well, it's incredibly taxing, and they're very stressed. I've heard from doctors and the medical societies almost daily. It is very stressful. They're in the line of fire every day. That creates concerns for them in terms of getting home to their families if they have younger children, if they have obviously older parents and grandparents, or people who have immunocompromised condition. So some people are now trying to stay somewhat separate from their families given the contact that they've had, number one, and long work hours, where we are trying to recruit nurses and other people that have been retired into helping in this number of areas. And number two, we're rapidly running out of the personal protective equipment you'll hear.
Yeah, we're hearing respirators and even hospital beds are at a shortage right now. That's a pretty scary condition.
Last number I heard was we were typically running at 75% capacity we could fill up in a big hurry. But one of the biggest concerns has been the N95 respirators and personal protective equipment, gloves and gowns and the like. So I think federally there's a push to try to get the manufacturing companies to increase their production, and for other companies who have the potential for creating this type of equipment to convert what they're manufacturing this time to start working on the personal protective equipment. We've broken into our national security reserves, if you will, in Connecticut. Is receiving its first shipment of personal protective gear. Unfortunately, the allotment to date is only ranges somewhere between 5% and 15% of what we require overall, and that will have to be doled out over all 169 towns and cities, if you will, for different hospitals, clinics, facilities. So the personal protective equipment is going to be in short supply for some time.
If you're just joining us, we've got Representative Dr. Bill Pettit with us on the line right now. And you just said something that really is kind of scary when you think about it, and that is if we're at 75% capacity and the state of Connecticut really hasn't even peaked yet. We're in fact, we're growing. We're still on the incline. Wow, we could theoretically another week or so from now, we could surpass the amount of respirators and even beds to some extent, exceed the amount of patients that we have respirators to facilitate them.
Yeah, and I don't want people to get hung up on that number, because I've seen older numbers and haven't been able to vet it. Probably someone from the Connecticut Hospital Association can give you an up to date number. But that is the whole thrust behind flattening the curve. That is, if we end up, just for discussion purposes, if we end up with 100,000 cases, to use round numbers, mm-hmm. obviously if those are occurring at the rate of 1,000 a day, our system's not going to be able to absorb, if 20% of those people are severely ill and require hospitalization, we're not going to be able to absorb 200 people a day, 7 days a week. And again, this is for illustration purposes. I'm just making these up for discussion.
Sure.
So what we'd like to do instead of, we'd like to flatten that out. So instead of 1,000 a day over, 2 months, we have 250 a day over 6 months. And 20% of those, 20% of 250 is only 50. The system would be able to absorb a smaller number, treat those people, allow them to heal and get out before they're replaced with other people. So we're trying to slow the flow of severely ill people into the system so we don't overwhelm our healthcare system.
Based on your experience, I certainly do. It does make a lot of sense. But based on your experience as a doctor, and I know I'm not asking you to make a definitive prediction. It's impossible. And based on what you know of viruses and how unique this strain of coronavirus happens to be. And how long it typically takes for a serum to any virus to be made and tested and vetted through the FDA and the hoops that it has to go through. And I know they're trying to expedite something you had just mentioned. I heard that saw that same report that you did last night. When do you think there would be something that will be available to the mass market here in the United States?
If we find out one of the drugs that's currently on the market has some effectiveness against this virus, we could, have reasonable data in two or three months. I think, development of a new drug will be, that'll be 6 months, a year or longer. So in terms of drug therapy, we have to hope that one of the drugs that's currently available, that if we do a ongoing trial, where you try it on 1,000 people and 1,000 people don't get it, if you see a dramatic response, you might say, well, this is, in the short term, this is what we're going to try because that's all we have. The vaccine, the experts in Washington, again, even though they started the trial out in Washington State, they're still thinking that it's going to be a year or so before there's a vaccine. So we're gonna have to hold out a long time before that's a possibility.
And then two questions for you. They're on the more legislative side before we let you go. I know you're ranking member of the Public Health Committee. Number one, I'll start with a very simple question. When do you find? We've heard the legislature could possibly be back on Monday, March 30th. But what's a more realistic date that you're hearing? Or what are the rumblings up at the state capitol that you think you'll? Or I also heard even something last night where they may cancel the rest of this. It's a short session. It's election year. I get that. They may actually cancel the rest of the session this year. I'm sure you've heard that as well. What is your gut telling you?
I haven't heard any rumblings about a date back. The leadership is supposed to be meeting over this weekend and early next week to make a decision about when we could potentially do it. I know they've talked about I've heard rumblings that they've asked committee chairs to pick two or three of the major bills that they think should go through. For instance, public health, we have something like 61 bills potentially on the docket, and to carve that from 60 to 60 we're never going to go through, but say we ended up with 15, they're talking about maybe doing two or three. We have a phone call with public health leadership coming up shortly to discuss that very issue. My guess would be that we are not back for another month or so, which brings us close to the end of the
year.
So we can see how things pan out. And I know they're discussing issues where only a limited number of people coming to the, 150, for the people who don't know the numbers, 151 people in the House, 36 in the Senate, only opening up the building and letting a very limited number of people in, say 10 people in for debate, and other people have to watch it on television, per se, and then going in small numbers at a time, 10 people at a time to go in and vote over the course of the day, leaving voting open for hours so that you're not putting all 187 people in there at once and trying to do the the social limiting and avoiding contact.
Yeah. Smart, smart. And my final question is, you know, as a ranking member of Public Health Committee, I mean, was this even brought up in any of the committee meetings, or have you talked to other, you know, the chair and other leaders of public health and you know, the commissioner as far as tackling this coronavirus on from a legislative perspective? What is on the radar?
There was very little, as you're well aware from your experience. This was a short session, yeah. So bills that come up are supposed to be related to finance or things that the chairs bring up. And the first case was reported in China in December. December 1, I think, was their first diagnosed case. So by the time we started in February, they were 2 months into it. We were starting to hear the rumblings of the cases in China and some other countries. And by the time this landed upon our shores, so to speak, we were well into the legislative session, and so there was not talk about it on the local level until it started to get any talked about on the federal level. So,
yeah. Okay,
mostly talk in the hallways as opposed to legislative,
right. Right, and that's how a lot of things start off. I really appreciate you coming on the show. You're fantastic. You're a great friend and outstanding colleague, and you know, a phenomenal humanitarian all around. And I can't thank you enough for spending your time with us this morning, Doc. Really means a lot to me.
Okay, Gary. Listen, tell everybody to wash their hands, do their social distancing, and limit their excursions from out of the house to what is critical, you know, picking up their groceries and anything that is critical. Obviously, we have a number of people that need to go to work, our first providers and healthcare workers and the people working in stores and the like. But other than that, everybody should hunker down and be safe.
Well, you just told them. thanks again, and try to enjoy your weekend as limited as it may be.
Okay. Thanks, Gary.
Look forward to having you back on sometime in the future. All right.